This is Twin Flames, written by Insi, read by Mistborn Hero. A Bungalow Stray Dogs fanfic rated for teen and up audiences, featuring the relationship Dasai Osamu and Nakahara Chuya, as well as the Armed Detective Agency ensemble. It is tagged for post-canon. Emotional hurt comfort. Dasai is bad at feelings. Nakahara is bad at feelings. Alternate universe. Soulmates. Non-sexual intimacy. It is okay. They are working on it. Ambiguous relationships. Summary. Chuya and Dasai struggle with the idea of soulmates and fate while personally dealing with a soulmate AU speedrun. Chuya receives the phone call in the middle of the night. It is not unusual for Dasai to call him at such times, but it is the type of thing that tends to pose a little person in his head ready to start ringing alarm bells.
Slug,
Dasai said. He sounds far too awake.
Care to tell me what you got up to yesterday?
The words curl off the phone speaker, sickly sweet with just enough warning for Chuya to roll over in bed and turn his bedside light on.
What the fuck do you want, Dasai?
He asks. He drags a hand over through his hair, working out some of the tangles, and glances at his clock.
God, trust Dasai to phone him at 4 in the morning. He only went to bed about 2 hours ago, and he had been hoping to get in at least 5 or 6 hours before he had to get up for work.
Dasai hums into the speaker.
Well, I just took a shower and was rewrapping.
I don't want to hear about your showering habits.
Chuya snarls. He ends the call before he has to hear anything else. The dial tone sounds in his ear, then falls into a static silence. For a moment, Chuya stares at the blank screen. He sighs and rubs his eyes, digging the sleep out. The room slowly comes into focus around him, and he pulls his bedsheets up to his waist. The night is not warm. It should come as no surprise that Dasai's contact lights up the screen again less than 30 seconds later. Against his better judgment, he picks up.
What? He demands.
Dasai huffs at him.
No need to hang up on me,
he says. His words sound surprisingly unbothered, which is unusual for him. It makes Chuya pause to listen more carefully.
Anyway, what were you doing yesterday?
Are you aware of the time? Chuya asks.
Yes,
Dasai says without hesitation.
Now, tell me.
Chuya scratches the skin behind his ear as he racks his memory. It is not that far in the past, but it is unfair to ask him these sorts of questions when he's running on next to no sleep.
Received a drug shipment, then did grocery shopping. Went back to the office and did paperwork.
He suppresses a yawn.
Is that good enough for you?
Grocery shopping?
Dasai snorts.
Not all of us want to live on canned crab and sake,
Chuya says. It is too early for him to be dealing with Dasai's snark. He runs a hand down his face and contemplates whether it is worth getting out of bed
and counting tonight as a write-off for sleep. Dasai's laugh, bubbly and fake, rings in his ears. Then he continues, with pressure spring-loaded behind his voice.
So, any run-ins with weird people?
It sounds dangerously similar to when he is trying to get a very specific answer that he wants, which is never a good sign for Chuja's personal well-being. No, Chuja snaps. There is a short pause before Dasai speaks again.
Okay, because I just found a tattoo of your name on my wrist.
Chuja pauses. He... what? How the fuck is that my problem? He hangs up without a second thought. Fuck Dasai and his stupid phone calls. His mind is whirling, and Chuja knows that he will not be able to sleep again like this. He might as well get up at least to get a head start on some reports. He tosses his phone onto his bedside table as he swings his legs out of bed. Bastard, Chuja mutters under his breath as he pads into the bathroom to brush his hair. What the hell would drive Dasai to get his, of all people, Chuja's name tattooed on himself? Or perhaps it had been a prank call. It would not be the first time that Dasai had phoned him claiming some gross untruth. He stares at himself in the mirror. Dasai's tone of voice, though. He shakes his head to clear it and grabs his brush. Then he catches a glimpse of his forearm and his stomach drops like a stone. He blinks, rubs his eyes until he sees the stars, and looks again. Fuck. There it is, in ink as red as blood, etched into his wrist in the size familiar writing. Tiny, neat characters that stick out a mile from his skin and a few scars that pockmark it. Dasai Osamu. And, well, Chuja forgets sometimes. There are bits of his life that he admits he has no memory of. If he drinks too much, then sure, he's sometimes liable to forget the details of the previous day. But Chuja is certain that he did not have a tattoo of any kind when he went to sleep. Fantastic. He turns the tap on and rubs at his wrist. Nothing comes away on his fingers. It does not dull even a little, and even after using up a sizable portion of his soap, the name stares stubbornly back at him. Something in his chest feels very tight as he storms back into the bedroom and picks up his phone. Never in his worst nightmares could he envisage having to phone Dasai about a mysterious tattoo, but apparently, even his worst fears are sometimes waiting to be realized. What the hell did you do? Chuja demands as soon as he hears Dasai pick up. Dasai's beam is audible in his voice.
Chibi, you called back! Are you going to tell me that we are matching?
Dasai, Chuja says, and his voice is like gravel in his throat. Explain now.
Come open your front door.
Dasai asks after a moment.
I'll pick the lock otherwise.
At this point, Chuja should know better than to be surprised. Still, he groans and pulls at his hair. One more thing to add to the list of 1001 reasons that he hates Dasai Osamu. The door swings open before he can get there, and Chuja's mind seems to buffer for a moment as he registers that he is not wearing a shirt. Cursing under his breath, he hurries into his bedroom and searches around for the first thing he finds. He is still pulling it over his head when Dasai invites himself into Chuya's bedroom. "So?" he asks expectantly, already unraveling his bandages. Chuya holds his breath. An already terrible night becomes worse when he really does see his own name come into view. The red ink blends a little too well into Dasai's wrist, and Chuya has to look away. He holds his own wrist out in reluctant return.
"Do you have some kind of explanation?" he asks.
It would not be unfair to say that he is resigned at this point, and the normal energy with which he would kick Dasai out of his apartment for this kind of intrusion has abandoned him. Cold fingers are tracing the words, and Dasai hums. Chuya cannot bring himself to look.
"Nope," he says finally, and pulls away. "I thought you'd have answers."
Chuya blinks at him.
"Why the fuck would I have answers?" he asks. "This seems like some shitty joke.
Who would get close enough to give us tattoos without realizing?" Dasai asks.
He gives Chuya an unimpressed look that Chuya is sorely tempted to slap off his face.
"Besides, it's not like any abilities affect me. Must be a problem on your side."
"A problem on my side." This time, Chuya does punch Dasai's shoulder. It is not as hard as it could be, but it is the least he deserves for that comment.
"I don't remember anything."
Chuya crosses his arms over his chest, hiding the name. Even to his own ears, the words sound defensive.
"Well, as long as it goes away, I don't care,"
Dasai says flippantly.
"How could I bear the shame of walking around with your name tattooed on my body forever?"
He manages to dodge the next punch that Chuya sends his way.
"If it's an ability, then it will probably be gone within a day."
Chuya resists the urge to look down at his own wrist again, if only to confirm that he's not in the middle of a very weird dream. Dasai grins at him.
"Thank God for that," he says.
He begins to wrap his bandages back around his wrist, and Chuya's name disappears beneath them. Then his expression turns to something that borders on the edge of a sniper.
"So, can I crash on your couch tonight?"
The night cannot possibly get any worse, so Chuya scowls at him.
"Whatever. You'd better be gone by morning."
He turns and walks back to his bedroom. Screw the reports. He is going back to sleep so he can wake up from whatever this weird nightmare is.
"Your wish is my demand,"
Dasai calls after him. Chuya glances back at his wrist. The name is still there.
Fuck.
For a wonderful second, Chuya wonders if it was all a bad dream when he wakes up. There is no name on his wrist when he scrutinizes it through sleepy eyes, nor is there a sign of Dasai on his couch. Then, he catches sight of himself in the mirror when he is brushing his teeth, and fuck no. If maybe he could deal with Dasai's name being tattooed on his wrist because at least he could cover it, there is nothing to be done about the fact that his hair has turned into some kind of dyed monstrosity. Black streaks pepper his hair and swirl out and down past where his has grown, hanging long over his shoulder. He rakes his fingers through it. There has never been a date that felt like such a good idea to take off from work. Without too much of a thought, he picks up his phone and sends a message to Kojo, and then dials Dasai's number.
Dasai picks up immediately and wails down the line.
Slug! How am I meant to face the world when I look like I had a bad run-in with a clownfish?
Well, that answers that. Chuja lets out a resigned sigh.
Wait!
Dasai adds before Chuja can hang up.
Have you checked if it's the same?
He lowers his voice conspiratorially.
Below.
Chuja does not dignify that with an answer. He ends the call, sends a text to Mori to let him know that he is working from home, and cradles his face in his hands. Where did he go wrong? What deity did he offend to end up in a situation like this? Why of all people did it have to be Dasai? It is like Groundhog Day when Chuja wakes up the next morning. He grabs the longest ends of his hair and stares at them in the morning light. They all have a familiar auburn glint to it. He heaves a sigh of relief. A feeling of impending dread continues to hang low in his stomach. He stands up and quickly works out why. There is a timer hovering above his head, like some strange cartoon character. It is counting down, and Chuja has a dreadful idea about what's waiting for him when it gets to zero. His feet carry him to the armed detective agency before he can really process what he is planning to do. Entering through the window is quicker than taking the stairs, and he feels all eyes fall on him when he shoves it open and steps inside.
What are you doing here?
Kunikida spits out the words like they are distasteful. Then his eyes fall on the floating countdown. Apparently, it is not invisible to other people, and he looks a little confused. Chuja grins at him. It must come off as slightly deranged, because Kunikida hesitates. I need to punch Dasai. I can't let you do that, Kunikida says after a regretful moment. The door on the other side of the room opens.
Too fucking bad,
Chuja says, and walks over to meet Dasai. He does not hesitate to send a hard punch at his shoulder.
Ow!
Dasai protests, rubbing it theatrically. At the same time, a sound that Chuja could best describe as an alarm going off 4 rooms away sounds in his ears. His head snaps up. Both his and Dasai's timers sit at 0.
Okay.
Huh, Dasai says when he looks up.
Guess that answers that.
Chuja scowls at him and aims a kick at Dasai's chin, which he jumps over.
I still fucking hate you.
Aw, slug. Dasai bats his eyes. The feeling is mutual. The confusion amongst the rest of the room is palpable as Chuja turns on his heel and walks back out the window. Dasai can deal with the backlash of that. Chuja has work to catch up on. Akutagawa has a crease between his eyebrows when Chuja marches into the Mori Corporation's offices. Are you feeling better? He asks. His eyes keep flicking up to the timer that continues to sit above Chuja's head like his own personal phantom.
Fine, Chuja snaps, and before Akutagawa can ask, says,
ignore it, stupid ability thing. It does not look like that answers many of Akutagawa's questions, but to be fair, it
is hard to pretend there is not a giant flashing set of numbers hovering above Chuja's head in mid-air.
But can't Dasai-san neutralize abilities?
Chuja flashes him a warning look, but obliges the question. Only through a direct source. It doesn't cover the effects of one. Chuja says, before he has time to question why exactly he knows the specifics of what the science ability does and does not cover so well. Whether or not it satisfies Akutagawa's as an answer, he does not try to ask any further questions. They work together in relative silence for the rest of the day, alternating between paperwork and planning before breaking for food sometime in the late afternoon. It is then that Chuja realizes Akutagawa has started frowning at him again.
What? He asks between mouthfuls of his bento.
Akutagawa seems to debate with himself whether he should say anything, and then sighs.
The timer's gone, he mutters.
Chuja looks up and, he's right, the numbers have disappeared. He stands and walks into the bathroom so he can stare at himself in the mirror. Sure enough, they have disappeared. So maybe that's it? 3 days seems like a reasonable time duration for an ability to fade away. Plus, it disappeared in the middle of the day when he had woken up in the morning the other times. He exhales slowly, closes his eyes, and then opens them again, just to make sure that there is nothing there. His reflection stares back. The numbers are still gone. Attention that Chuja did not know he had been holding dissipates in his belly. The final step, the only thing that he has to do to make sure it is gone, is phone Dasai. But he decides as he returns to his lunch that it can wait for later. Dasai is probably being as useless as ever at work, and why would Chuja want to save the rest of the agency from whatever nightmare he is inflicting upon them? It is not gone. Once he had arrived home and taken a shower, he had found the words wrapped around the curve of his collarbone. The red ink is back, and Chuja feels vaguely sick whenever he tries to look at it.
I hate pain, you know?
Yes, Chuja does know, all too well, in fact. He cannot bring himself to phone Dasai and get confirmation that he has Chuja's first words to him somewhere on his body too. He goes to bed early that night and stares at the ceiling until he falls asleep. Songs play intermittently in Chuja's head the day after that. The next, the color of one of his eyes has changed, and in the mid-afternoon, the taste of sake appears on his tongue. No matter how much he brushes his teeth or snacks on a variety of strongly tasting foods, he cannot get it to leave. Chuja is fond of alcohol, yes, but he likes fine wines, not the taste of cheap spirits. It is closer to rubbing alcohol than it is to anything Chuja would normally be convinced to go near. It is so off-putting that Chuja ends up leaving work earlier and walking to the agency with an onigiri bought from a convenience store en route, stuffed into his bag.
"You, again,"
Kunikira says when he walks into the office. He sounds resigned, which seems at least a little unfair. It's been
2 days since Chuya was last here, which, sure, is more frequent than it should have been, but it is not like it is unjustifiable. He resists sticking up his middle finger and swallows a swear word.
Me, again, he agrees. Where's the waste of bandages?
Atsushi bites his lips before answering. He didn't come in today, he says.
Bastard.
Chuya mutters under his breath. He is about to leave when Atsushi keeps talking. Under normal circumstances, Chuya probably would have ignored him and carried on. But there has been something sitting uneasily under his skin for the past 5 days. Is Dasai-san all right? Chuya pauses in the doorway.
He'll be fine,
he says, though his voice is gruff. Atsushi hesitates and continues, more slowly, as if he's measuring the probable impact of each word before he says. He's seemed kind of off in the past few days. He slept a few days ago in the break room, and when he woke up, there were warts around his neck in red ink, and he went home. He hasn't come back since.
Well, fuck.
Yeah, well, it's Dasai. Chuya manages. He cannot listen to anything else, and he leaves before anyone replies. He decides not to think about the fact that he rushes to Dasai's shitty agency dorm. The sake on his tongue has never tasted worse. Dasai, he calls when he walks inside. He toes his shoes off, and after sticking his head around the half-open bathroom door, he continues into the bedroom. A Dasai-sized lamp is cuffed up under the blankets, and Chuya prods it with a finger. Dasai moans in reply.
Oi,
Chuya says. He pulls the cover back to reveal Dasai's head, hair in knots, stained bandages half coming off, and sheet creases all over his face and the exposed part of his neck. The guilty empty bottle of sake is cradled to his chest.
Get up, he says.
Dasai blinks up at him.
Don't wanna,
he says like a petulant child and turns over to face away from Chuya. Chuya pauses for a moment and stares down at him. Then he walks out of the room and returns to the bathroom. He takes a set of fresh bedsheets and a face cloth from the laundry closet, dampens it, and then a few rolls of fresh bandages from the cupboard before returning to Dasai. Chuya drops the damp towel on his face.
Fuck off, Chuya!
Dasai groans.
Either go shower or I'll use that towel to make it 100 times worse.
He pushes Dasai towards the edge of the bed without mercy, until Dasai is forced to catch himself from falling on the floor and stands uneasily on his feet. Chuya points at the door.
Go.
Dasai gives him the middle finger and trudges obediently out of the room. That was surprisingly little effort. Chuya frowns but does not linger on it for too long. After trying not to think too hard about how long it's been since the bedsheets were last washed, he begins to change them. He wonders for a moment how he ended up here, doing Dasai's laundry for him, but, well, he's done similar things before, and Dasai has his own ways of paying it back to Chuya. He throws the dirty sheets into a pile in the corner, something to deal with later. By the time Dasai reemerges with mercifully wet, clean hair and unbandaged skin under an oversized t-shirt, the bed is fresh again. Dasai flops onto it immediately, driving creases into what had previously been a perfectly smooth surface. Chuya wrinkles his nose and sits on the bed next to him. In silence, he begins, and Dasai lets him, inspecting the damaged skin for anything that needs treatment or disinfecting, and then rebandaging his arm. He goes slowly, careful not to wrap the gauze too tight or too loose. After finishing the first arm, he moves on to the second. Dasai uses his freshly bandaged arm to rub at his eyes.
"Why are you here?"
he asks. Chuya's eyes remained fixed on Dasai's skin. The patch of skin where his name had been in is blank again, with only scars and cuts left behind.
"The only fucking thing I can taste is your cheap sake. I'd rather not spend any more time than absolutely necessary with my mouth tasting like your misery."
"Touching," Dasai mutters under his breath. He exhales heavily and stares up, letting Chuya continue quietly. Once he has finished, Chuya puts Dasai's arm on the bed again. The bandages on his chest, neck, and legs have not been done, but Dasai can take care of those by himself. Finally, Chuya gets up to retrieve the onigiri that he had brought and forces it into Dasai's hands. "Eat," he says. Dasai looks at it with apathy.
"It's plain," Chuya says.
"You can't pretend it will be offensive to your delicate taste buds." He tries not to let any desperation seep into his voice. Really, he cannot deal with the burn of cheap alcohol for much longer. Dasai unwraps it and, at long last, takes a bite. The flavor of plain rice appears in Chuya's mouth, too. He rests back against the backboard of Dasai's bed and props his arms on his bent legs.
"You figured out what this curse thing is?" he asks.
Between bites of rice, Dasai replies.
"Got some ideas."
Now that he has started, he is eating it with more interest than Chuya can remember when seeing him eat in a long time.
"Like what?"
Dasai chews slowly, contemplating. "It's the type of thing you read about in trashy romance novels," he says, finally. His eyes linger on Chuya's face for a moment too long, and Chuya is forced to pull away.
"Oh."
His mind scrambles for an explanation, until it settles. Faded lovers, confidante, true lover, heart's desire, soulmate. He swallows. Dasai glances at him out of the corner of his eye.
"Not more excited? Isn't this the type of thing you read all your poetry about?"
His voice is not harsh, but neither is it kind or understanding. Chuya cannot read his thoughts on it, but right now, most of him is convinced that he does not want to know, either. His stomach is turning, and he stares at his hands just so that he does not have to look at Dasai. Does that mean that his soulmate is Dasai? Does such a thing even exist? It seems like the thing of fairy tales and far-off mystical worlds. Certainly, not something that could apply to a half-successful science experiment in the Mafia and the former demon prodigy. Perhaps not even something that Chuya would ever want for himself. He does not like the idea of something being so far out of his control. And besides, why Dasai? He closes his eyes and ignores a pounding emerging in his head. The flavor of rice still lingers in his mouth. He wishes he hadn't asked.
It is as if disability, curse, wants to add insult to injury. Chuya wakes up the next morning with a red string tied around his fingers. Not even Chuya can pretend that he does not recognize that from the legends. He rolls over in bed and pretends he cannot see it. Slowly, the pieces are falling into place. Whenever he or Dasai sleep, the way this thing manifests changes. If he could just sleep again, maybe he would not have to face such a glaringly obvious insult to the conversation he had shared with Dasai. Sleep does not come, though. The string does not disappear, and Chuya has to go to work before he is late again. The next day, there is a counter on his arm that decreases each time he takes a step. That night he dreams of Suribachi City and walks down the empty streets where he and Dasai had met. When he wakes up, he sees Dasai in the mirror. After he falls asleep during a meeting the next day, his shadow morphs into Dasai's silhouette. Then he and Dasai can exchange drawings under his skin. A plant that Chuya definitely never bought appears in his room later that week, and when he phones Dasai, he confirms that he was not the only one. Some days, he almost thinks it is over, and then he hears Dasai's singing ringing in his ears, or finds a number or a symbol or a word drawn somewhere on his body. Some kind of ability disease. Dasai's handwriting scratches into Chuya's hand one evening after they wake up, able to talk to each other by writing under skin. Chuya stares at the characters and then picks up a pen.
Yeah. You think it is one?
You don't? Chuya replies. His pen hovers above his skin, about to add something else, but he cannot quite get the words to come. If Dasai is having doubts, then Chuya should probably be getting ready to have a crisis. Dasai takes a long time to write back.
It's a weird ability if it is one.
If it isn't an ability, then what is it? Chuya shifts to his other leg to continue writing.
You seriously think the universe has it in for us personally enough to engineer something like this mess?
There is another long gap. Dots appear on Chuya's skin as if Dasai has placed a pen on himself and then thought better of what he was about to say multiple times.
The universe, huh? I don't want divine intervention in my life.
Chuya blinks at the words. Okay. He puts his pen down. There is nothing he can say to that in reply. It just won't stop, and Chuya is starting to wonder how much more patience he has left for this. It has been almost 3 weeks. Try as he might, it is hard to hide it from his colleagues, and all he really wants at this point is a clean end. Unfortunately, when Dasai's thoughts superimpose themselves into Chuya's mind the next morning, a conclusion seems an awfully long way away. A goose is chasing him. It is possibly the most humiliating thing that Chuya has ever had to deal with in his lifetime, and he and Dasai once had to pose as a couple for an undercover mission when they had both been 18. The rest of the Port Mafia executive team is watching him curiously as Chuya circles the table, careful to stay as far away as possible from the goose. It is a feral-looking thing, and for a few seconds, Chuya has been close enough to see its teeth. Since when do geese have teeth? It squawks at him, and Chuya is at a loss for what to do. He is also at a loss to explain what series of events have led to him having a fucking goose appear out of thin air and start a murder charge at him. "May I be excused from the meeting?" Chuya asks through gritted teeth. His line of sight remains fixed on the goose. For each step he takes, it takes one to combat him. Mori's expression is one of mild interest. "It does seem like you may be a little preoccupied," he says, and then hums. "Very well. You are excused. I'll expect you to catch up before we next meet."
"Yes, boss."
Chuya backs out of the room with his back to the door. The goose is advancing on him, and finally, Chuya makes a break for it. Slamming the meeting door behind him and running down the Port Mafia corridors to get out of the building is a bad look for him, but he is certain that getting publicly mauled by a goose will be worse. Can the goose teleport? Will he be safe if he barricades himself in his apartment? Does he really want to commit to tarnishing his search history with something along the lines of what to do when a goose that's part of a probably soulmate curse appears out of nowhere and starts chasing you? He is somewhere down on one of the many main streets in Yokohama when he catches sight of the goose out of the corner of his eye. If a goose could glare, then he is most certainly on the receiving end of a death glare right now. But at least it is not chasing him anymore. It is then that he realizes that he is walking in the direction of the armed detective agency. He resigns himself to embarrassment and continues his route to the building. The goose stalks after him like a bad smell that refuses to leave. By the time he arrives, he wonders whether he can face the choice of going inside and admitting to being chased by an oversized feral bird. Just as he is about to turn, he is met with hissing and a wing coughing up the back of his head. And, well, that answers that. He walks into the agency with a goose following him up each step. As per usual, Kunikida's voice greets him first.
"Why is there a goose in the building?"
He yells as papers go flying around him. He stands up in the middle of the mess and points at the bird as if anyone could possibly have missed it. It bites Chuya on the hand, and he yelps, hurrying the last few steps across the building and standing behind Dasai.
"There's a fucking goose chasing me," he says.
Dasai raises his eyebrows.
"Makes sense! Geese eat slugs, don't they?"
Chuya returns Dasai the cuff that the goose had given him.
"How the fuck would I know, moron?"
"You're being chased by a goose, Mr. Fancy Hat?"
Genji asks. He observes Chuya with wide, concerned eyes.
"Did you anger it? Most geese don't chase people unless they invade their territory."
Chuya glares at him.
"It is a magical goose. I don't fucking know what I did."
"I was wondering why your thoughts disappeared from my hand,"
Dasai says, as if It is a conversational topic. He stares at his palm, blank, and definitely not spotting any thoughts, with mild interest.
Thoughts? Tanisaki repeats, sounding lost.
Dasai holds up his palm to show him. Yep, he says, without further elaboration. His sudden movement makes the goose move.
Chuya steps closer to Dasai. One way or another, the goose needs to go. He's willing to stoop as low as forcing himself to nap on the ground, if that is what it takes, because he is certain that Dasai will refuse to make this simple for him.
Tanisaki is staring with his mouth hanging slightly open.
Wait a minute, you're being chased by a magical goose?
There are many strange things that Chuya has been asked throughout his life, although it is accurate that, debatably, tops the list. He looks away from the goose just long enough to throw a glare at him.
You tell me, he snarls.
Another pause follows.
Is this connected to all the other weird things? Kunikira asks.
Other weird things, Dasai says flatly. Chuya had not put much thought into how Dasai would be dealing with his end of things at work, but it makes sense that he, too, would be struggling to hide it, and a level of unavoidable embarrassment was tied to that fact. Kunikira ties his papers back into neat piles as he elaborates. The hair color, that one day with the plants, the other one where curse words would keep appearing on your forehead. Chuya remembers that day too. Internal monologue sharing, or something. He had not realized that his was so vulgar.
Something like that, Dasai says, waving a hand. His voice is light, but not in the effortless way that he usually carries around.
It almost sounds like they are edging closer to something he would rather not think about.
And frankly, that's fair enough. Chuya would rather never discuss this with Dasai's co-workers either. Unfortunately for him, he did show up with a giant goose following him, which is still standing on the opposite side of the room, staring him down. At this point, it is basically unavoidable.
It's just an ability that someone probably accidentally put on us, Chuya mutters as he takes a step closer to Dasai. They are practically touching by now, but the goose still does not look satisfied. Jasana watches them, bored.
An ability? Those don't work on Dasai.
Fine, Chuya snaps. An ability put on me that then affected Dasai, by association.
It is only after Chuya has opened his mouth again that he realizes that Dasai was giving him an easy route to say nothing more about the situation.
Jasana frowns, and her nails click on the desk as she taps them.
By association?
Kenji's eyes seem to glitter.
It's like in a soulmate story! He gasps, like in my hometown during Tanabata, when we would always listen to the story of the cowherder and the weaving princess.
Chuya closes his eyes. He had hoped that they might avoid that word. Maybe Dasai had too. Chuya can sense the sudden stiffness in his posture.
The star-crossed lovers who could only meet once a year on a bridge made of crows that crossed the Milky Way, separated against their will and so in love that even the universe worked miracles to allow them to reunite? Few things could so poorly match him and Dasai as a description. Chuya could describe Dasai in many ways. Love, not like the stuff that made up soulmate legends.
would never play into it.
Kenji-kun, it's not a soulmate story, Dasai says. His voice is gentle, but out of sight of the rest of the room, the tendons in his hands are sticking out from how tightly he has clenched them into fists.
Can you think of anyone worse to be soulmates with than a short slug?
Kenji frowns at him.
But these are the stories they tell about soulmates.
There is an awkward silence following that. Kunikira looks horrified at the idea that Dasai and Chuya could share some sort of divine link. Most of the rest of the room seems to be trying very hard to avoid their eyes.
Occam's razor, Yasuna says lightly. Chuya scoffs and crosses his arms over his chest. It makes him feel just a little less exposed.
What kind of shitty myth would send a goose after someone? He says. The goose gives him an indignant honk and takes a threatening step forward.
Dasai stands and grabs Chuya's sleeve, dragging him into the break room. Then he points at the couch and pushes Chuya into it. The goose and the several pairs of curious eyes follow them. He closes the door on them all.
Sleep, Dasai says as he drops onto the couch beside him.
Chuya pauses.
You're trying to help? He asks.
Dasai rolls his eyes.
The goose will bite me next. I don't want beak marks.
He says it as if it is an obvious conclusion to come to, and frankly, Chuya cannot be bothered to argue. He draws his feet up in front of himself and closes his eyes. Taking a nap is not something that comes naturally to Chuya, but recently he has been operating on a combination of unprecedented circumstance-induced stress and the resulting lack of sleep. He can feel the fog coming over him as he sits there in silence. At some point, he feels pressure against his upper arm. Dasai is leaning into him. They have touched plenty of times before, but this quiet intimacy is something different. Chuya lets out a long breath and drifts to sleep.
A week later, after he and Dasai have switched bodies, lingered as silent phantoms in each other's dreams, and shared several other unfortunate bonds, Chuya wakes up feeling empty. It is an odd sensation to describe because he cannot ever remember feeling a similar way. It is as if his body has been drained of everything that makes him who he is, like all that is left of him is a hollow shell. Then Dasai phones him. Chuya has never answered Dasai's calls as consistently as he has in the past month. Once again, he picks up expecting an explanation and is not disappointed.
So, do you normally wake up on the ceiling?
Dasai asks. Chuya blinks groggily.
What?
Dasai hums.
I've got for the Tainted Sorrow, and I'm stuck on the ceiling. I can't get down. Will you come and help an old friend?
You're not my friend, Chuya grumbles as he gets out of bed.
So he and Dasai have switched abilities. It is not the weirdest thing that has happened, but it is the most unsettling. When he tries to summon for the Tainted Sorrow, nothing comes. Even Arawaki is notably absent. It sends pangs of unease right through his body.
What am I, then?
Dasai asks. Chuya pauses. This is too much for so early in the morning.
I'll be there in 15, he says,
and presses the end of the call button. He then remembers that he does not have his ability at his disposal and sends a text, amending his time to 30 minutes. Yokohama's morning traffic sucks. And it is made even worse by the fact that he is now hyper aware of everything he touches. He can't feel that no longer human is active, but he knows it is there. A part of him is curious to know what it feels like to take someone's ability. The other part of him is content to never find out. He has known Dasai long enough to be well aware of the isolation that his ability brings. People rarely like something that robs them of what makes them special. From what he understands, Dasai does not particularly enjoy the physical feeling of nullifying someone's ability either. For the Tainted Sorrow has its own problems, but Chuya has spent his whole life understanding them on a personal level. Whatever no longer human is, it is something that Chuya has only ever witnessed from an outsider's view before. Kyoka watches Chuya when he walks into the Sai's dorm. Her large eyes regard him curiously, but she turns away quickly when Chuya returns the stare.
Chibi, you're here!
Dasai calls when Chuya walks through the door. Just as he had said on the phone call, he is sitting upside down on the ceiling. His legs are crossed, his back is perfectly straight, and his hair hangs out of his eyes. Chuya scowls up at him.
So what? You just want me to touch you?
I'd appreciate it if you could catch me too, Dasai says with a long smirk. I'd rather not end up with a head injury. I've got things on my agenda for today.
You, an agenda.
Chuya looks straight up as he positions himself and then holds a hand up above him.
Sounds unrealistic.
Dasai reaches for his hand.
You'd be surprised, he says.
Their fingers touch and Dasai plummets to the earth as gravity suddenly reactivates on him. Chuya throws his arms out in front of himself and catches Dasai. His knees buckle and then they both sink to the floor, with Dasai flat on top of him. Chuya feels energy surging into him where he and Dasai are touching. He cannot tell whether it is because of no longer human or the suddenly awkward atmosphere that has occupied the entire room.
I guess you're not entirely useless, Slug,
Dasai says as he stands up. He is not touching Chuya any longer, and the emptiness returns in full force.
Is this seriously what no longer human feels like? He demands.
Dasai raises his eyebrows. I could ask you the same question, he says evenly. He brushes off his clothes like he is trying to get rid of non-existent creases.
Because this kind of sucks, you know?
His eyes meet Chuya, and then they both regard each other in silence for far too long. Finally, Chuya looks away.
Whatever, he mutters. Anyway,
Dasai starts with a grin. He must be feeling particularly cruel today.
Did you figure out an answer to my question before?
When Chuya stares back at him with no recognition, he huffs.
What am I, if not your friend?
A nuisance,
Chuya says without hesitation. He sticks his fingers in his ears and walks out of the room.
Here is the problem. Dasai is a nuisance, undeniably, unequivocally so.
But the situation over the past month has also made Chuya do a lot of thinking. They are not strangers. They know each other inside and out, except maybe not quite, because Chuya is still learning little bits each day. They are not friends. Chuya cannot ever imagine willingly spending time with Dasai, except when they do, and the silence is comfortable and Dasai's presence is soothing. They are not partners, not in the way, platonic or romantic, that the idea of soulmates demands they should be, except they once were, maybe before everything had gone to hell. Chuya tries to not linger on it. It is more difficult than it should be, but perhaps that is understandable, given that they are a month into living out every common romance trope that exists. The word love is not one that Chuya wants to go anywhere near, but it is slowly becoming harder to skirt around. When he wakes up at 3 in the morning, he phones Dasai without thought. "What am I to you?" he asks. Dasai replies easily.
"You're just Chuya. I don't think there's a good word that describes what you mean to me, but you're more important than I think you understand."
The words slip off his tongue too easily, and Chuya stops dead. "What?" he whispers. There is a choking noise on the other side of the line.
"I didn't mean to say that,"
Dasai says. A pause follows.
"I don't hate you, I miss you."
The sound of Dasai covering his mouth with his hand sounds oddly distorted over a phone speaker.
"Did you go to sleep?"
he demands.
"Why can't I lie?"
"Oh." Chuya clamps his mouth shut. There is a long silence.
"That's kind of unfair,"
Dasai says eventually. He waits a few more seconds.
"Why do you ask?"
"I don't know, you asked first," Chuya wants to say. Instead, he replies. "I don't understand what we are. I don't understand what this all means. I don't like the word soulmate, but it is the only word that people keep saying." He closes his eyes as he listens to the words spilling forth from his own mouth, but makes no effort to muffle them. Dasai is right. It is unfair if Chuya gets his question, and Dasai does not get one in return. The deadness of the night feels particularly real as they both listen to the phone line crackle, neither of them with quite the right words to share.
"Do we have to have a word?"
Dasai asks.
"Can't we just be us?"
It sounds like he's speaking a little more carefully now, trying to avoid anything that could incriminate himself or Chuya. 3 in the morning phone calls are always dangerous territory, though. Chuya's mind runs rampant as he tosses the questions up in his mind. "I guess," he says. "All your co-workers seem to think it is some kind of divine intervention thing, though. Like a destined romance or some shit." Dasai snorts.
"Sounds about as far away from us as you could get."
"Yeah." The idea of being Dasai's soulmate sits uncomfortably in his stomach. Some days, it seems to make sense. There is no other person in Chuya's life who has single-handedly made such a large impact. Other days, it seems like the worst possible alternative. Nothing about him and Dasai matches what the stories tell him a soulmate should be. They fight. Some days they hate each other. They occupy some strange middle ground between friends, enemies, and lovers.
If they were to be turned into a legend, 100 different people would write their relationship 100 different ways, and he's not sure that soulmate would be one.
Chuja stares at the black abyss that makes the ceiling. He should not be allowed a phone on nights like tonight, particularly not when he cannot lie.
Could you ever love me?
Yes.
There is a long silence. Then Dasai speaks again, and he sounds like he is in pain.
That's really not fair.
I'm sorry. I'm not sorry.
I know.
Chuja exhales. He purses his lips and plays with words in his mind until he finds them spilling out of his mouth.
I think I love you, but not like in the stories.
He pulls the bed covers around him tighter to combat the sudden vulnerability that he feels. It is like he has laid himself bare, and at least as far as Chuja's own understanding of his emotions go, he has. The silence feels infinite. Then, Dasai huffs out a laugh.
The soulmate myths never suited us that well anyway, he pauses.
Two.
Whatever this is, maybe it can just be for us. It doesn't always look like how stories want it to.
It is not a reply to a question, so though the words seem to come reluctantly, they have not been forced from Dasai's mouth. Chuja is suddenly reminded that as much as he hates having to admit this out loud, Dasai probably hates it even more. He always has been the most emotionally constipated person that Chuja has ever met, and that is saying a lot given that he works in the mafia. Dasai does not say anything else, and Chuja has nothing to add. He falls asleep again, and when he wakes up, their call is still going, and Chuja has every scar on Dasai's body also printed onto his own. He covers his eyes with his hands and forces back tears that are sitting just out of sight. Chuja, understandably, spends the next few days distracted. Sleep does not quite come, and when it does, it is in short, wakeful bursts. It seems that he is not the only one, though. A searing pain ricochets through his arm when he is at home on his day off. His opposite hand jumps to the side and clutches it, but what is it? He is in the middle of his couch, and it feels nothing like a muscle cramp. He sits up and continues rubbing at his arm with a frown on his face. It hurts. It is more than like the pain of a stab wound than anything that Chuja could have incurred himself at home. His mind drifts to Dasai as he plays with his phone, but he does not dial the number. It will come, sooner or later. Sure enough, within half an hour, Jasana phones him with reluctance in her voice.
You're Dasai's emergency contact. He injured himself again,
she reports dutifully.
You don't have to come. Just letting you know.
I'll be there soon,
Chuja says gruffly. He stands and walks back to his front door to pull shoes on. Even as he takes the now familiar route to the agency, he keeps his arm limp by his side. He knows that it is purely a figment of his imagination, but it is difficult to ignore altogether. He finds Dasai in one of the cots in Jasana's infirmary when he arrives. After bearing the curious expressions of every other agency member, damn it, why did they all have to look at him like he was a strange species in the zoo? The quietness of the room is a blessing.
Hey, he says. Dasai looks up.
Slug. There is a distinct lack of the normal vitriol he packs in his voice, which Chuya does his best to ignore. They have not spoken since that night, and the tension makes it show.
What did you do?
Chuya asks as he kicks a chair closer to Dasai's bed and sits in it. He crosses one knee over the other.
Got stabbed on a case, Dasai says with a shrug. Well, at least Chuya had made the correct assessment about what he had felt. Given how many times he has been stabbed, he would have been disappointed in himself if he had not.
Idiot,
Chuya says. Dasai grins, but it does not reach his eyes.
Who's the real idiot? You're the one that ended up in the agency again.
He fiddles with the lines in his arm.
Thought you swore you would never come back after the goose.
Chuya follows them up to the IV pole and finds what he thinks might be saline. Probably for dehydration. For Dasai to get stabbed, his reflexes must have become floppy, which can almost always be attributed to him forgetting that food and water are necessary to live. Dasai yawns.
You gonna sleep?
Chuya asks. Dasai gives him the middle finger, but does not open his eyes again. Chuya wonders how long it has been since he last slept. Normally, he assumes that he and Dasai must have some crossover, given that they routinely go to bed with one manifestation of the curse and wake up with another. Perhaps it is not quite that simple, though. He knows when Dasai actually falls asleep, because the pain drains away from his arm like water going down the drain. Chuya shakes his arm out a few times to return the feeling to it, and sighs. Sitting and watching Dasai like this feels wrong, makes his stomach turn when they meet in medical wards. There are too many bad memories for him to ever manage to relax. Chuya reaches out and takes Dasai's limp hand. He holds it loosely so that it would slip out of his grasp if Dasai moved even a little. It only occurs to Chuya that the lack of sleep is catching up to him too. When he wakes up several hours later, he and Dasai are still holding hands, but now Dasai is awake and looking back at him with a small frown on his face. Chuya startles and pulls his hand away. Dasai takes it back.
Don't let go, he says.
He grips it tighter so that Chuya cannot pull it free without some effort.
What?
Chuya asks, still blinking himself back into full consciousness. The corner of Dasai's mouth twitches.
I think this time, touch heals once.
Chuya leans back in his chair as he exhales.
I wish that could be a permanent feeder, he mutters, finally.
His mind is starting to buzz at the contact. When was the last time they had touched? When he caught Dasai after they had swapped abilities? It feels different now.
Would be good,
Dasai agrees lightly. Chuya wonders how quickly this supposed healing works. Then he frowns. He does not particularly want to stop holding Dasai's hand, he realizes, and he is not quite sure what to do with that information. Their touch leaves flowers blooming on each other's skin. They have teardrops tattooed on their skin for each time the other cries. Sparks fly whenever they are within a 5-meter radius. An invisible rope pulls their stomachs in the direction of the other. It still does not end. They receive what they think might be a danger meter for the other on their forearms. Their hands become stuck together until Dasai falls asleep in the middle of a cafe. After they brush together one morning, they are forced to relive each other's worst memory. They both throw up after that and agree to never mention it again. Then, one Thursday morning, Chuya has words that he does not recognize written on his shoulder. There is an air of finality to them that makes him feel sick. He reads it only once before he covers them with tape and takes a nap in the afternoon, just so that he can wake up with something else. When he does, there are dried tears on his face, and his world is in black and white, literally. He sits up from his couch and looks around at monotone walls and furnishing, then he groans. He can guess what this is. Dasai breaks into his apartment that night, and when they lay eyes on each other, the world bursts back into color. "Great," Dasai says. He is blinking slowly, as if readjusting himself to color again. Chuya scowls at him. "What the fuck are you doing here?" "Getting my colors back." If he had not been in the middle of sautéing vegetables, maybe Chuya would have turned to him with crossed arms and shoot him out of his apartment. Instead, he turns to his broccoli and mutters under his breath as he moves it around the pan. He ends up sharing his dinner with Dasai that night, and when they sleep, they share their dreams too. They are sitting in a tree, so high in the air that it would be difficult to see people on the ground. Chuya does not look up at Dasai in his branch a meter or so above Chuya's own, but instead at a sunset in the distance. It fills the sky with oranges and pink, offsets against blue that fades into grey in the horizon. "So," Dasai says, he swings his legs off the branch, back and forth, back and forth. "You think this is the end?" Chuya shoves his hands deep into the pockets of his hoodie and huffs. It is not cold. Chuya could not explain the temperature if he tried, but it makes him feel a little less exposed. He snorts. "You really think it would end? Just like that? With a sunset?" Dasai hums quietly. "Sunset?" he asks. "I see the sunrise." "Does it matter?" Chuya mutters. "Suppose not," Dasai agrees. Chuya feels his eyes on him for a moment. "Have you decided what you think this all is?" Chuya stares into the dying embers of the sun as he replies. "I was trying pretty hard not to think about it, actually." He breathes out and it appears in a cloud of condensation in front of him. Dasai laughs, but it is not genuine. "It does sound like a pretty terrible story." "All this and still not a fan of soulmates?" Chuya asks mildly. His mind skates over other myths. The String of Fate, Plato's Twin Flames, Anmakra, an almost universal concept adopted by 1,000 different poets in 1,000 different ways. Dasai wrinkles his nose. "I don't like the idea of fate. My choices are my own, not the result of the universe planning them for me." In part, Chuya understands. He would rather be in control of his own destiny, too. He is who he is. Chuya does not lack part of himself. He is not half a soul, looking for its pair, nor an object waiting to be completed. It leaves a bitter taste in his mouth that he could be considered anything less than himself, whole and absolute, without Dasai. And he says as much.
We're not two halves of whole, not like the myth says.
Nope, Dasai says. Chuya glances up to see him leaning back against arms propped up behind him.
Can't think of anything worse than having to share a soul with you.
He pretends to retch. Chuya snorts.
Please. We would kill each other by the end of the week.
Probably. After a short pause, Dasai continues.
Lucky for us, the maids don't dictate the way we have to live.
When Chuya looks at him, he finishes. We've survived until now, haven't we?
I suppose, Chuya says. But we survive because we're just us.
Dasai nods slowly, and his legs fall still as he looks out across the countryside, sprawling in front of them.
Maybe that's all this was meant to be, Chuya says. Just us figuring out what soulmates means to us. No one said it had to be romantic. No one said it had to be platonic, either. Soulmates can just be us as we are, without explanation.
Dasai eyes him from his branch.
You always did love the poetics. And you always said they did nothing but make the misery seem a little bit sweeter, Chuya replied.
Dasai shrugs. He pushes himself to his feet, so he is standing, and picks his way down to Chuya. The thin branches he threads on bend under his weight, but do not snap. When he reaches Chuya's branch, he comes to sit next to him.
So, you think we're soulmates then? Twin flames. Each other's confidant. Whatever you want to call it.
His voice is devoid of emotion, so carefully planned to be blank that Chuya almost refrains from offering him an answer to spite him.
Not really, he says.
Chuya pauses and follows.
True, soulmates are things of stories, the myths that the universe makes people who fit together into perfect pairs. We are our own creation, however messy and imperfect.
Dasai's lips twitch.
Very poetic. Partners of our own making.
Yeah, Chuya breathes. Just us as we are. No fate that brought us together. No myths that tell us how we have to understand or love each other. Just us.
Dasai cups his hand into his lap and fixes his eyes on the horizon. Just us, huh?
The words are quiet, like they were intended only for himself and not Chuya. It is like he had never dared to voice them out loud before. There is a long silence where they both watch the clouds turn a deeper pink. Chuya's hand creeps over his lap until it lies a hair's breadth away from Dasai's. Then Dasai takes it. He rests his head on Chuya's shoulder. They sit there, silent, and watch the sun die.
When Chuya wakes up, he knows it has ended. Not in the "I can't see anything wrong yet" way, or the "well, at least Dasai's voice is out of my head today" way. This is a different feeling, a feeling of complete normality. He is slumped over the couch, leaning on Dasai. They lie, intertwined, and Chuya replays the dream in his mind. His arm feels slightly numb where he has been lying on it, and finally Dasai stirs too. They do not immediately move or even greet each other. For a long moment,
All they need is each other's company and silence. Then Dasai moves. Is it over? He asks. His voice is raspy from having just woken up, like he is scraping the sides of his throat.
Guess so, Chuya says. He pushes himself up and rubs the sleep out of his eyes.
Dasai hums quietly.
Let's never do this again, he says as he stands up.
Chuya rises too.
Agreed.
There is a long moment where they both stare at each other as if daring the other to mention that previous night. Finally, Chuya breaks. Dasai is a bastard. He won't be pushed into anything that he does not want to be, so Chuya takes the fall for him.
You remember the dream?
It is not a question, but after eyeing him carefully, Dasai nods.
That's it, then.
There is a bit. And then Dasai nods again. Just us, he says. It still sounds a little dry. Chuya is no longer sure how much of it is the morning and how much of it is emotion that Dasai is struggling to hide. Not like the stories, not like the soulmates.
Just as we are.
Chuya finishes for him. Tension, anxiety, stress, worry that he has been fostering for the past month, for years, really, drain out of him, and he collapses back onto the couch.
Fuck, I need to sleep for a week.
He leans back into the cushions and watches Dasai through heavily lidded eyes. Dasai seems to struggle with himself for a minute, before, finally, he sits again, too.
That you were allergic to taking a break.
I deserve it for putting up with you for this past month, Chuya says. Out of the corner of his eye, he can see Dasai's face twitching in the telltale sign of a smile he is struggling to hold back. Chuya shifts a little until their shoulders are touching each other. He feels Dasai relax under the touch and his body flushes with a comfortable warmth. He draws his legs up in front of himself and curls his arms around them, pressed into Dasai's side as Dasai presses into his in return. It is easier to just be them, no pressure from the myths or expectations for how soulmates are meant to look when they are together. Chuya closes his eyes, just Chuya and Dasai as they are. That is enough. The end. Thank you for listening.
Author notes. I don't know. When I read-watched Chuya and Dasai's characters, I got the impression that I don't think either Chuya or Dasai would be comforted by the idea of soulmates or fate. I kind of think they would both be really put off by it, to be honest. Like, they would rather not have their lives planned out beyond their control. I don't know, though. Let me know your thoughts. Or, well, let the author know your thoughts in their original post. I originally had a scene where they found out what caused the whole situation, but I thought it ended up working better if they didn't know, so they had to come to their own conclusions. End of author notes. Reader's notes. This is so long. I've been recording for 135 minutes. Not quite the entire time, because I did take like a couple of breaks to check messages and talk to people. But basically, I've been sitting in my tiny blanket fort for recording for 135 minutes. Ta-da! I really, really, really like this story because, well, mostly I was in love with the little mishmash of every soulmatey trope that
there is, and having them suffer through it, and being too stubborn to even consider, like, hey, do you think it will go away if we kiss? I mean, we don't know the cause in the end, but maybe for any other ship, it could have been an option. Let's kiss and it's going to go away. But these guys, they do like their control over their own fate, so I can see them growing into being romantically involved in the future, but I also don't care if it happens. I think I see them as soulmates in the they are the most important person to the other, and that's it. They might have better friends, or yeah, anyway. I hope you enjoyed. Please let me know in the comments and let the author know if you liked the fic in their comments. And remember to drink some water and take a break.